Okay, hi guys, welcome to Taz Talk. This is a show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast, which is hosted by the McElroy brothers and their dad. I guess this is sort of experimental at this point. We'll do a couple of episodes, and if it sucks, we'll stop. So...
Or how about if it sucks, we'll continue.
That, what's that?
Even if it sucks, we'll continue because we love Taz.
Maybe. Well, okay. I should mention that in the 40 minutes it took Chelsea to get her setup ready, I drank like a whole 24-ounce Red Stripe. So I'm a little toastier than I expected to be on our maiden voyage here, but that's just how it goes.
It's the podcast within the podcast featuring two drunk chicks. There
I know,
you go.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think we have to admit at least for me, a really big motivation for doing this is, okay, first of all, biggest motivation, I really love the Adventure Zone, and I'm excited to go into this new phase
Completely, completely agree. I think both Rachel and I got into the Adventure Zone pretty late into the game. I got in at the very end of the Stolen Century arc. Rachel, I think you also got in pretty, in the middle of, yeah, at the last arc, you jumped in and you listened to the whole thing in, 3 weeks or something.
I did, and by the time I caught up, it was finale time, and...
Perfect timing, by the way.
I think episode 69 had not dropped yet when I caught up, and that was it. I listened to 68, and then it was a waiting game. Okay, the secondary motivation, though, is just, the joke of doing a podcast...
About a podcast.
Delivering commentary about another podcast. The joke is too good to pass up. So, by the way, this episode of Taz Talk is about episode one of the commitment mini arc.
Yes.
Which I actually have a question about that for you, Chelsea.
Go ahead.
Well, the boys have said that their plan is to do several smaller arcs to get their feet wet and kind of figure out what they want to do post-balance. What do you think is the likelihood that they'll get so attached to the commitment storyline and characters that they'll just run with it and, go the whole way?
I literally wrote that in my notes. I was like, what if the boys get committed to commitment?
Oh, geez.
And that's the thing too. So one of the first notes that I wrote as I was listening was that, do we get a theme for each of these mini arcs? Are we going to get these fully formed characters with each of these mini arcs? I know I'm probably going to get attached to these characters just after knowing them, even for a short amount of time. I know that Griffin in other episodes has mentioned that he finds the character creation part of D&D so thrilling, because I think he as a writer in general, he likes to create, and I think that goes for the rest of the boys too, but just Griffin in particular has expressed that he really enjoys character creation. So I wouldn't be surprised if out of all of them, he'll create these characters, but if it comes to having to move on and do other arcs in favor of what works best for the team, what creatively works best for the Adventure Zone, I think out of all of them, Griffin would have the most willingness to move on, just because he's not paying attention to them all the time, those characters aren't going to go away. I'm sure that there will be parts of the fandom that will really adore Irene or really adore Remy or really adore Nadia over whatever characters might come in the future. I think the fandom itself is going to have a lot of opinion. So we are going to get commitment. We are going to get attached to some characters. I think the boys are going to get attached to some characters. But I think if they know that there's going to be, a bigger story with other characters, that they would be willing to move on.
I think actually the point about character creation being really fun is a good one, because in my own personal experience, it's absolutely true, kind of just like with D&D, you get to a point where you get really into it and you're just kind of sitting around making characters for fun, because the character creation process is really interesting and it's how you learn more about the mechanics of the game. I guess this is a little different because they're not playing D&D anymore. I think it's the Fate system that
yes,
they're using, which
yes,
I'm not
is.
Familiar with. But Yeah, if I mean, with the premise, character creation is really fun. Doing a bunch of small campaigns, one after another, would be perfect for that mindset. You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. I think that what they're proposing that they do, at least to round out the rest of the year, is really ambitious. If they can actually, like, in the art that they've uploaded for this experimental period, it features a lot of different themes that they've all kind of touched on.
The spaceships are on there. The fucking, like, semi-truck spaceships. The yes. Cowboy Bebop homage. I yes. want it so bad.
Yes.
Chelsea, I want them to do space stuff so bad.
Like, part of me is part of me is hoping that maybe in secret they're actually recording all four arcs all at the same time. Because in the back of my mind, I'm worried that maybe they're going to get so attached to the commitment arc that we aren't going to be able to explore those other characters. Like, I think that, I hope that they are able to have these mini arcs and that, you know, the timing is appropriate in that we get a really good feel for who the characters are, but then we're able to jump to the next thing, like, with relative ease, you know? Because it seems like they're building up to actually do all these mini arcs. So I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be really fun.
I agree. I mean, whatever they end up doing, as long as it's good, then it'll be good.
As long as they're enjoying it.
As badly as I want them to play aliens, like, as really, really badly.
Yeah, yeah.
As I want that. I mean, the superhero thing's kind of fun. I really like just jumping into it jumping around.
Mm-hmm.
The gimmick of that Remy, Irene, and Nadia have to be within 100 yards of each other to use their powers, that's going to be fucking fun. I love that. And for reference, 100 yards is a little less than the length of a football field.
Yes.
So just for the visual.
Yes.
That has the potential to cause a lot of shenanigans, and I'm really into it.
I like that you, Rachel is a very creative writer, as you may or may not know, but I mean, I like that you as a creative mind immediately jumped on, oh my god, this weakness, they have this weakness, and their weakness is that they have to all be together. So, like, part of me is wondering, like, can Irene be in the middle, and then Remy can go in one direction, one, like, 100 yards away, and then Nadia can go another 100 yards away in a different direction, or do they,
oh shit,
or are they all,
I didn't
just
think about that,
are they all just in a radius of 100 yards of each other, or did I just say the same thing twice? Like, what exactly, like, there's a lot of different ways that this could go in, and if they're using Roll 20, like, are they actually doing the math, or are they, like, using the squares to do they've imposed themselves to this box that they now have to work in and around. So I'm wondering how that's gonna, you know, I'm pretty excited for, they said it because it's gonna come up in some future shenanigans, and I'm, like, super down for that.
That's really funny. I hadn't thought about
the actual
specifically
workings.
Whether it's kind of like you can chain the radius, or if anybody leaves the area of effect, then it cancels everyone's superpowers.
Oh, yeah,
that's,
yeah,
really funny.
Definitely. Well, I mean, even considering what we learned with the world-building aspect, like, if there were ever an instance where any one of them lost their powers, like, if Irene were Kaldana? Am I saying her name right?
Cardala.
Cardala, thank you.
Have to look it up.
Like, if Irene were in Cardala mode, and then she all of a sudden went out of radius, like, would she all of a sudden become Irene again? Or, like,
probably. I mean, like, that's something I think in the setup episode, Justin talked, or, like, they talked about her losing her, or, like, switching back to Irene at an inopportune time. I mean, that's obviously going to be super fun if that ever happens.
Yes, yes. And see, that's the thing. I hope that we get to a point that it can happen. And that it, I don't want to say I hope they get in trouble, but I'm just going to go ahead and say,
but
I hope
you
they
do.
Get in trouble.
Come on.
I totally hope they just get in trouble, because I want to see them get out of
Let
that
me...
trouble.
Chelsea, that's, you know, the Suffering Game was my favorite arc. You know what I want. You know how much I like seeing my faves get hurt.
But is Clint going to be that kind of GM, though? Like, and I think that's... So something I did want to be sure that I pointed out is that Clint is in a position now where that he's, like, hurting the boys through these puzzles and these mind games. So to hear their... them working through the color puzzle and to hear them solving it and like to hear Clint like trying to put the clues down was very exciting, just because you could tell how excited he was to be able to be in this role. And I also thought it was so funny, I just wanted to mention real quick, that the person who got the most crap out of not doing character voices suddenly has to do like 22 different character voices. And I just I just want to say,
he's not doing a bad job.
Oh, he did excellently. He had a Scottish character. He had someone from Fargo, like Scottish Pride. I it's in caps in my notes. Scottish Pridemore.
Oh Lord. Well, what's funny is that when I listened, I don't know if you ever listened to Taz Knights.
I did not. I have not.
Okay, I have. It was pretty good. Troth is amazing, of course. That's Justin's character.
Oh, okay.
And Clint's character had an extremely obnoxious voice almost the entire time. No one ever had to remind him, do your character voice, Dad. And I'm kind of sitting there listening to this going like, what the fuck? What has he been, is it an act during like regular Adventure Zone where he pretends, oh, I forgot to do a character voice. Like, what the fuck? Because he did a fine job during Taz Nights. And he's doing fine now, I guess.
Yeah, no, he's doing great so far. I don't know, maybe it was just a running gag in his head.
The part...
In his head, he's like, I got this.
Oh, Lord. The part where he did the Fargo accent was actually kind of the one part that I laughed out loud during this episode, was because he's doing the accent, and then Griffin, as Remy, goes like, nice voice, dude. Where are you from? And it was like he was channeling the ghost of Magic Brian. It was like I had a flashback to episode 4. It was really weird.
Oh, man. Oh, wait. Since we're talking about Griffin, I did want to point out that Griffin's character voice is basically like teen Griffin, or it's Loop almost. Like Loop without the kind of feminine stylings of it. But it's just, it's excited Griffin. It's Griffin.
I know.
It's Griffin as a puppy. Like, have you ever seen that gif of the golden retriever puppy who's just excited and overwhelmed by everything?
No.
Oh my god, I have to show you, because that is essentially Remy's character. I love that he has restlessness as a as an aspect. And I love
I really
that,
like that too.
I love that he has a fidget spinner.
I know.
Well, Lord. To be fair though, I think I love all of them. Irene. Can we talk real quick about Irene?
I want to talk about Irene.
Yes.
I guess I don't feel very strongly about any of them at this point. I mean, I'm kind of in a wait and see place right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think out of all of them, I'm really excited about the potential of Irene, because Justin likes to solve puzzles,
yes,
right? And I mean, from Taz Balance, I remember Travis saying he likes to solve puzzles, but he was specifically playing Magnus to be sort of like, you know, kind of a meathead guy. But part of Taco's character was he seems like this kind of like dopey airhead, but he's super sharp actually and pays really close attention and was like frequently in the swoops in and save the day position, mm-hmm, and like figured the shit out. So I don't know if Justin is planning on playing that up again or downplaying it, or if he will be able to keep himself from falling into that role again. But I really, really, really want to see like shy, adorable little Irene end up being the big puzzle solver in the group.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that even in this little taste of what this arc is going to be, that you already see how each one of them approaches problems, and it's so vastly different from Magnus, Merle, and Taco. Like, Irene immediately, like, her first line in the entire podcast is, hey, there's this person that needs to be taken care of. Don't worry about it. I got them. Like, everything that comes out of her mouth is about caring for others. Like, she is worlds away. Like, Taco, of course, Taco cares about people. Actually, no, I take that back. A big part of Taco's character is that he looks out for number one, and number one is himself, you know? But Irene is just this person who is so... She seems very selfless. She seems very, like... I am here to serve others. I'm here for teamwork. Even when they're having that last the color puzzle, like they went to the different groups and they were getting animosity. That's another thing. Why is everyone in this? I keep wanting to call them super. Oh, what is it? Superhero school? Because it almost seems like It almost seems like, yeah, they're in like Sky High or something. But while while Remy is like sprinting to win the race, or while Nadia is like flipping off the bird in the other direction, Irene is just like, hey team, hey guys, like, you want to work together, you want to like collaborate and stuff. So I just think that she's a precious gentle soul, and I'm so excited to see how Cordala is going to be so different from her.
I think Justin and Travis both did a good job making characters that are a lot different from their previous characters.
Yes.
God, I'm drunk, Chelsea. You took so long with the goddamn mic. I can't even talk right now. I hate this. Anyway.
You're setting a standard for every episode after.
That's just how it is, okay? This is my life. This is the person. This is who I am.
It's okay. You're going to be amazing.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Is this... God, I always remember the fucking... Never mind. Gotta go off on a tangent here.
Yes. So, I mean, we've talked about Irene, we've talked about Remy to some extent. Nadia? Do you have any notes
on
Nadia?
She's so mean. Okay, actually, so back to Travis and Justin doing a good job,
yes,
of sort of playing their foils in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Travis right off the bat asking, and you know, I was kind of looking at the Taz commitment feed on Tumblr, and like everyone was going nuts for like Nadia, like, is it mandatory, you know?
Yes.
Do I have to be there? It the reason people love that line is because right off the bat, Travis is really getting into like playing that character. That's like that's one reason why people like it. The other reason is because that's so fucking relatable. I don't know. It's like, you know, the people who like the show are a bunch of nerdy introverts. And
yeah,
that feeling of like, God, do I have to go to the stupid fucking... That's the other thing that was like, listening to people role play awkward office bureaucracy situations is a special kind of torture, because like that's my everyday life. It's different when you're listening to elves and dwarves running around with swords and
yes,
fireballs, but like having to listen to this stuff, I don't know how I felt about it. It was a little weird.
I think that's completely it. Like, Nadia is just so cold and you know, hyper-focused scientist. And I think that's the thing that Travis seems to be... That's what drives his character creation, is he picks phrases or he picks things and then he holds tight to them and really embellishes them. So I think the phrases that he's using in particular to drive Nadia is hyper-focused scientist and... what is it? Is this mandatory?
Right.
Which those two things kind of... They cement who her character is at this point, which I think that's a really great way to go about your character. If you're trying to, you know, so you want to stick to something, but you want to also give them a foundation to grow up from. I mean, I also think that it's really interesting that she has this very, you know, cold Mediner? What is it? What is the word?
Demeanor.
Thank you.
Hey, she has who's the drunk one here, Chelsea?
She has this cold demeanor, but then she goes up and she plays the scientist song.
Yes, I know. I was just going to go in that direction. Because it is... I remember the way Balance starts off is they just sit down and start playing, and they don't really have a... They just made up some characters and they just went with it. But obviously... traits from those characters get sort of snowballed along the way,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
Like, they do... And it's based on... They're not reading from a script. They're just acting, and they're goofing off. So, you know, no matter how much Travis tries to play cold, calculating scientist, I think this character is going to end up being funnier than he intends, because yeah, then you have the whole... what was the song? It wasn't Weird Science.
Yeah, wasn't it Weird Science? Weird it Science.
It wasn't. She blinded me with science. And so, like, you know, that
there
we go. That's a really... I don't imagine cold calculating scientist wanting to play that song. You know what I mean? It's
yes,
like a kind
yes,
of quirky trait that's... It's just going to be one of those things. Like, now, like, you know, like Merle wanting to fuck plants. Like, it's going to be one of those things where this was a joke that has now become reality. And that's kind of the fun thing about tabletop RPGs. That's how it works.
Like, yeah.
You just do stupid shit in the heat of the moment, and then that becomes your thing.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, it's almost, it's kind of feeding, you know how sometimes in media there are those, like, tsundere characters, the characters that are really, like, kind of mean at first?
Yeah, Taco. Yeah. Confirmed.
Taco's a tsundere.
Justin pretty much admitted as such.
Yeah, basically. Well, I mean, and so that's the thing. Like, for Nadia to be this kind of tsun character, character and to kind of have this cold front, but then, you know, she has this quirky side. As much as I'm sure that's probably a goof on Travis's point, I like that. I really like that. Like, it brings an aspect of humanity to her character, which I think is adorable. I love it. They're all like, there's so much potential. I love it when there's a new D&D campaign. Oh, it's so fun.
Oh man. Yeah. Okay, so this is a can of worms here, but during the setup episode,
yes,
where Travis is talking about, oh, I think Nadia would kind of be contemptuous of Remy, and then of course Griffin jumps in and is like, I don't like that. That doesn't, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, Griffin backseat DMing, which he obviously had pointed out to him and he felt really bad about, or he felt attacked about. But yeah, like, that really struck me, and that was the moment where I'm like, wow, Griffin is really backseat DMing right now, when he jumps in and goes, like, I don't like that because it doesn't fit the tone that the Adventure Zone has set previously. But to me, when I heard that, I'm like, yes, that's a really cool character conflict right off the bat, and that's an interesting place for their relationship to grow from.
Yeah. At first, I might have sided with Griffin a little bit, only because, like, from a character standpoint, if someone comes to me with a new character and immediately says, one of the defining things about my character is that they hate your character.
Like, I love it. I love it. Enemies to friends.
I would be pretty, exactly. Like, knowing that there's that arc is going to happen, hopefully. Like, knowing that is reassuring, but at first I'm going to be like, hey, wait a second. What did my guy ever do to your guy? You know, like, I when I heard that Griffin was getting feedback about, like, backseat DMing, or that he was, like, doing too much from the sidelines, I've never DM'd a thing in my life. So I was like, oh, I didn't notice that quite so much. But now that you mention it. Yeah. Maybe it's because after listening to the Adventure Zone, whenever I hear Griffin, I'm like, oh yes, Griffin is the law. He is...
I know, and that's the problem. Like, that's what was happening in the setup episode.
Yeah.
Where it's like, and I mean, I have, like, so many thoughts about this, because from my own experience, I know that it's hard to turn off, because I've been, you know, player and DM, and I go back and play with my coworkers, and, like, other players will ask questions and I will answer on behalf of the DM. Like, I can't turn it off. It's actually really, I feel really bad whenever I do it.
Yeah.
But I do catch myself doing it. So it's that. And also, like, I understand, like, this show is Griffin's baby and he doesn't want it to get messed up. So that's why, you know, he wants to, like, is that the right direction? If we do something like that, is that like the going to match the tone of the show? Like, I understand why he's doing that kind of thing, but it also felt like, Griffin, you need to give your dad a chance. But like you said, he was quiet. I always remember, I saw the tweet where he first posted the link to Battle Wagons, which is the first piece of music he did for Balance.
Yes.
And at the end, he said something like, if everybody hates it, I'll immediately stop because I'm an adult baby.
Yeah,
and it's like, when he was saying, like, everyone yelled at me on Twitter and it made me feel bad, I'm like, oh, Griffin, I know, that's the person you are.
And I think, well, he's the babiest 30 under 30 media luminary.
He is the babyest.
He is. And I totally feel him on that one. Like, as much as you want to be an independent creative mind, like, your audience is kind of... Their feedback's important, so I feel him on that one. Also, I might be very, very protective of Griffin just because he's Griffin. I can't help it. Sorry, I love
him. No, he can take some knocks.
I swear. He can take some knocks. And I think he did a really good job this time about just being a reactionary player instead of a DM. Like, I was almost half expecting him.
Yeah, he did fine.
Oh, yeah, he totally did fine.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I don't know if this was just, like, how it was going to be, or it was because specifically he was trying to avoid the things that he'd gotten complaints about, but yeah, like, he was totally fine this episode.
Yes.
And, like, don't get me wrong, I love Griffin, too. He's my hero, and I really, really admire him as a composer and a content creator and storyteller.
Exactly, And don't get me wrong,
Griffin,
I love...
No, again, me noticing him backseat DMing, it was not a complaint as much as a, like...
Observation.
I'm interested to see how this goes.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
How well he... It's like, I'm interested to see how well he gives up control of his show.
Yes. I think it's nice that he's still, like, you know, the main editor, and he's still the guy doing the money zone.
That's
but,
true. Oh, yeah, that was weird.
Right? Because he's not just my best friend and my DM. He's just my best friend.
Just the best friend.
And this player guy, I guess. Who is he? I don't know.
What do you think about them using Roll 20 also?
I thought it was fun. I do really miss the ASMR sounds of dice hitting table. Like,
for
that,
me, yeah.
Oh, man, I miss that. I love that.
It's I don't know how much this is just me being biased and it's something I'm not used to, mm-hmm. but definitely when I started off listening to The Adventure Zone, I remember thinking, like, I can't believe they're not using a dice roller and stuff mm-hmm. online. It just makes a lot of sense. But now I realize, like, I'll hear Griffin or someone go, okay, I'm gonna roll for this. And then I'll be like, I'm waiting for the other foot to fall, waiting to hear the dice sound. And then he says, oh, that's what I got. And it's like, I have this kind of false start feeling when I hear that. And I'm sure it's just something I'll get used to. But the dice had a lot of character. I mean, you know, in the last arc.
Yeah, but hearing,
and not hearing that, there's something missing when I'm not hearing it.
That's exactly it. Like, hearing them say, oh my god, I got these new dice. And then immediately, like, the first thing they roll with their new D20 is a 1. Like, that was the best. That was the best. Although, I do appreciate that they are using Roll 20. I appreciate that they're actually rolling in Roll 20. Because even from the one time I played D&D, like... seeing everyone's dice rolls as a collective, just, you know, it's kind of nice as a group to see, okay, well, you did roll that, I saw you roll that, and now we're all on the same page at the same time, instead of you having to tell me, oh, I rolled a 13 or something.
That's how it is when you play in real life, when you're with other people. Is you see the dice being rolled. It's actually super exciting. So that is,
it
like,
is.
And I remember they talked
exciting.
About this in one episode. Like, I played Tuesday with my coworkers, and there were just a couple rolls where we were just, like, bated breath watching the dice roll. And when it, like,
yes.
The guy, it was probably an attack roll or something, but he succeeds on the roll. And we all jump out of our chairs and we're, like, screaming, like, Dungeons & Dragons and tabletop RPGs are so fun.
Yeah.
Like, they're so much fun to play and apparently to listen to, which is why we're making this podcast.
Yeah, thanks to the McElroys, now I know, I've been converted. I play tabletop games and I make podcasts, like, thanks, McElroys.
Don't worry, Chelsea, session number 2 is coming up. I'm going to turn you guys into champion warriors yet.
All right.
Yeah, it's weird feeling the transition. Like, I mean, it might be... I saw the picture that they posted, by the way, of...
Oh, of their Roll 20, like, their floor plan?
Yeah, it's just as shitty as ours was.
I love it. I love it so much.
It looks
the clip
really
art.
Silly. Yes.
The clip art was amazing.
I guess I worry... I mean, this is a not probably not a valid worry, because it's the kind of thing that they cut out anyway, like rule checks and stuff, but I worry about the game board bogging play down.
Mm.
And I mean, just in general, let's, like, you know, maybe this is useful for Clint, although the game board this time was really just, like, silly for fun, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. They didn't actually reference it a whole lot, I don't think.
No, they didn't.
And
but
Clint,
one of the things...
Go
yeah.
ahead, go ahead.
Well, that's one of the things coming from, like... playing D&D and listening to the Adventure Zone, that was one of the things that always struck me, especially in combat. Like, you know now, but movement and how far you can move and who you're next to and what's going on is a really big deal when you're playing, like, with the game board by the rules. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of would continually realize, like, they don't pay attention to movement at all. What the fuck? But that was actually something, like, I really admired Griffin's DMing style in that sense, where he kind of made these dungeons in quotes that he just, you know, he could just describe where they were going and it worked. And it didn't bother me that it was on rails a lot of the time, which it definitely was, but it just worked out that way. I thought it was fine. It worked well for the medium.
Yes.
And I thought it was really entertaining role play. So
it was.
I was into it.
I think that's what drew a lot of folks to the Adventure Zone is this. Like, as much as it was maybe on rails, it was also a really engaging piece of fiction. It was a really engaging, like, a story arc with development and characters, and it was a whole lot more depth than I think the boys had intended to get themselves into. And it lent itself to more creativity beyond its original concept, which I think that's the really fun part about it. Like, and I hope that, you know, it continues. Like, they can use Roll20, they can do whatever they want, but I hope that they continue to just create and let their characters inspire other people.
Yeah, I mean, they've specifically moved to a different gaming system where the focus is more on storytelling and roleplay instead of, like, traditional RPG elements, which I'm not gonna, like, definitely, it probably makes for better storytelling and podcasting to move away from the heavy rule stuff that was in D&D, but as a player and as the DM, like, all of that fucking stuff is so fun.
It is.
I love, like, when I'm actually playing, I remember one of my DMs before said, like, I feel bad that I don't give you guys enough roleplay opportunity and we're in this campaign where it's just, like, constant dungeon crawling, but I loved that campaign. Like, I love all the rule stuff. I don't know, combat and dungeon crawling and all that shit where you're just, like, opening up chests and fighting things. It's really fun. Like,
yeah, it is fun.
I play video games. I like
the structure
rules of Dungeons and Dragons, you know?
Yeah. I think winning when there is a structure is just as satisfying as winning when there is no structure. You know, there's something to be said when you can feel good from either way of doing it. Like, not gonna lie, when we were in the Stolen Century arc, I kind of really missed the rails, like, a little. Like, I liked how freeform everything was and how everyone got a chance to develop their characters and go on these wacky adventures that they created for themselves. You know, that was a whole lot of fun. But, you know, I think a lot about the 11th Hour arc back in the Balance. Taz Balance, and I just remember thinking
back in the day, back in the day, all the whole way back.
Like, all Griffin did really was he made a map, he plopped them down, he killed them a couple times, but the boys, you know, they figured it out. So it wasn't quite as free form as the Stolen Century might have been, and I really liked that. Not to say that I didn't like Stolen Century, but it's just, I kind of liked the rails a little bit because it felt.
I feel that a lot. And with the 11th Hour, I definitely felt it was fun. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the 11th Hour a lot, especially when I re-listened to it. Yes. I appreciated it a lot more. I thought, a lot of good stuff in there, but it definitely felt like, I think in my mind, the picture of Lucas's lab in Crystal Kingdom is so much clearer, and the Rockport Limited and Wonderland and Suffering Game is so much clearer in my mind than, well, I don't know if that's true. I don't know. Yeah, like, I think, like, you know, Griffin and them, they talked about this in episodes of TTAZZ about how they got complaints about, oh, Griffin, you've got the thing on rails, but that's what worked for the medium and for, like, a podcast. And I agree. I think, like, it worked, you know, and it never bothered me that, they can't wander around a map and, like, endlessly ruminate about, like, oh, should we go to the inn first or should we go to the, like, that's the shit that's fun in person, but not necessarily fun to listen to other people doing.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. I don't mind the rails. I really liked just how much And I think this is much to Griffin's credit, is he's the kind of DM where his folks will say they want to do a thing, and he won't say, no, don't do that, you're messing up my story. Like, that's a really great feature about his style of DMing. And it seems like Clint's doing that too, where they set up this world and they let folks in and they do whatever they want. Griffin's first thing that he does in this game is that he murders someone because they're on international waters. What is with people and immediately killing people?
Fucking Kareem. Oh, my God. I will kick his ass. Lynn Sl- Okay, she wasn't even going to have a name. I wasn't even going to name her.
All right, we have to think of a sign-off.
I mean, not really. Oh, well, one thing is that I'm probably going to make a Tumblr account to post the link to this on, so I will probably record a special addendum where I tell you the URL for the Tumblr account that you can find us at.
Hell
and
yeah.
And maybe an email address that you can contact us at. So other than that, I can think of maybe, Chelsea, if you want to say where you are available on social media.
If they make it this far, my name's Chelsea. I'm Phoenix Down on Instagram.
Aww.
I am Phoenix Down with two N's at the end. And I'm Keiko Pin Cosplay at Twitter. I was thinking we could have a hashtag where if folks want to, like, you know, talk. Or, I mean, the alternative is that we just lurk the TazCast hashtag for any materials and see what the pulse is on Twitter, on the Instagram, on everything.
I am not a Twitter person.
It's okay, because I am. Twitter, okay, and good. Instagram. I got this.
Cool. And I'll be on Tumblr and Reddit, and you'll be on Twitter and Instagram, and between the two of us, we'll cover the whole spectrum.
Yeah. I like it.
All right.
Should we clap again so that we know when to end?
No, I think it's fine. We'll figure that out. We can just say, thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, and one other thing, Chelsea.
Yeah, I'm still recording. Are you?
I'm still recording. It's
oh,
fine.
Cool. Okay, yeah. What's
maybe
up?
Maybe do a blooper reel if we need to. I'll do a big burp into the microphone.
That's it. That's the sign off every episode.